So, after hearing about kind of all the groups that have helped bring the event together, I'd like to tell you about Professor Braungart, because he's actually the reason that we're all here. And he is a partner and co-author with William McDonough in writing the book Cradle to Cradle, Remaking the Way That We Make Things. He is a co-founder with McDonough in McDonough-Braungart Design Chemistry, MBDC. He's a professor of chemistry at a university near Hamburg. He's a winner of global awards for scientific achievements in environmental protection and design excellence. And he's also been a manufacturing and supply chain advisor to companies that we've all heard of, like Nike, Ford, SC Johnson, Unilever, BASF, and Volkswagen. We're happy that they're working on those issues as well. But I also wanted to tell you a bit about why I personally had been excited about having him come here. He's came all the way from Germany to be able to talk with us. And that is that I think he represents something about the possibility of building a sustainable future together. And what I like is that he has a perspective as if he stands in that future. And then he's so firmly just grounded there. And he looks around and tells us what he sees. So it's like, what does it look like? And it makes it look so logical and so possible. And like it takes issues that could seem complex and makes them look quite straightforward. And of course, humans are intelligent enough to do this. We could do that. It's another design challenge. So there's a certain kind of optimism in it. And it also begins to sound very familiar. I mean, it sounds so matter of fact that I feel like, well, of course I could have done that. Or it feels like I always thought this, but I didn't exactly. I mean, I probably thought pieces of it, but I hadn't put it together in a way that was just simple and made it look so straightforward. So I appreciate that. And I like the optimism. Kind of, there's also something very positive about it, very optimistic that we can do this. A real celebration of human ingenuity. It's humans. We're smart enough to do this. We can pull it off. Look at all the other things we've done. Of course, we can do this. We can build a sustainable world together. So I'm happy to introduce you to Professor Michael Braungart.
Good evening. Thank you, Lisa, for this nice introduction. But I'm not that smart. Yeah. I really like mediocrity. Yeah, I enjoy mediocrity, and I ask you to celebrate mediocrity because when you want to be smart in all the things what you are doing, you end up with 100% mediocrity. So, but when you celebrate mediocrity, you can be smart in a specific field. Yeah, and you can, on the other side, stand your partner in life as well, how she brushes her teeth or how she eats or whatever. Yeah. Because if you think that you're so special, yeah, you have a permanent stress and you think, how can I live together with somebody else when I'm so special? And so and on the other side, it helps you to see the qualification of all the others as well. So what I'm really good at is not any type of ethics. Yeah. So if you want to hear anything about ethics and moral behavior, I think it's good to have this for you personally, but it's not a way how you can structure society. Yeah. Because if you think that your ethics is good for everybody, then finally it might end up in a dictatorship. Yeah. So I'm not talking about being aware of anything. I'm not talking about the right consciousness. Yeah? I'm just talking about quality. I'm just talking about how to do things after 30 years of Titanic discussion, end of planet discussion. I ask you to talk about good quality, good science. And I'm talking about celebrating human creativity and celebrating human ability to deal with things. Because, look, our natural lifetime expectation would be about 30 years. Yeah. More than 90%, 99% of all the people ever lived on this planet never lived longer than 30 years. Yeah. And so, because we have been torturing nature for so long, yeah, we now try to over-romanticize nature, yeah. Which means that we feel guilty for waking up in the morning for being on this planet. Yeah. Say, oh, I'm so sorry to be here. Yeah. And this is not a way how we really can celebrate human genius and human activity and human creativity. Because when we feel guilty in the morning, then we try to reduce to be bad. Yeah. You wake up in the morning and say, I'm 100% bad, and my goal is to be 90% bad. Or my goal is to be zero at the end. Yeah. And yeah, so we have all these groups out for zero emissions, especially here at the West Coast. Waste minimization, reduction, avoidance, all this guilt management. Yeah. And I'm not talking about this. I'm talking about really celebrating abundance, not reducing, avoiding, minimizing. And in this context, I want to talk to you about how to do this. And basically, maybe you see it's raining and it's cold here. So the greenhouse effect is not what it was when I was young anymore. So and the greenhouse effect is one of the things which actually happen, but it's never there when you need it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I want to point out that the carbon here we have here basically it's not the greenhouse effect first, that we shouldn't put carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. The first thing is, it's stupid to do so, yeah? Because carbon is so rare. It's about 2% of all the elements is carbon, yeah? And how can we be so stupid when carbon is such a nice element who can connect to all different other elements, yeah? To put it in the atmosphere or in the ocean is just not intelligent. But people think about that we are running out of oil. Yeah, this would be the most relevant thing to do so. Yeah, to think about that, and so they try to minimize energy consumption. I want to point out that if we take all the fossil fuel what we have, we can turn it into gasoline if we want for the next 300 years. Yeah, but it's not what makes sense, yeah, because these elements are just too rare. But if you look at the periodic system here, you see that there are other elements on there, like copper. Yeah. Copper is so rare that we will lose these copper ores in the next 30 years. Yeah. And if you look at people, for example, in Sri Lanka, the people use 10% of the energy what we use. Yeah. But we use 300 times more copper than they do. Yeah. So if they would just have the same amount of copper than they use in the energy side, there wouldn't be any copper left. Yeah. And you can go over all these elements in there, and you see that most of them are rare. So it's not the first thing to talk about toxicity, but to look that these things are rare. So if you want to make use of these materials, yeah, we need to think about differently from the materials perspective. So after talking to you about mediocrity, one of my biggest mediocrities is my language. So whenever you have any question or doubts, whatever, and you don't understand, please raise your hand and say, Michael, I don't get this. Can you repeat this, whatever? Yeah. I want to talk to you about design. And it's not from the design like you do it in this country where you talk about the designers, which are pretty low in the food chain. Yeah? Here, the designers are just the ones who beautify things, and in a lot of cases, most of the designs look ugly. Yeah? If you look at a washing machine or whatever, it's just awful. Yeah? It's just because they don't celebrate design. But I'm talking from a design perspective, from a broader perspective, how you really design your whole system, how you design material flows, etc. This picture comes from a university a hospital in the monitor, which you see here, comes from a monitor. Yeah.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
I'm so shy. So is it better?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So this TV monitor comes from a hospital in Los Angeles, yeah. And United States is shipping all these materials somewhere else. There is no recycling of copper in this country, not one ton. Yeah. Everything is shipped somewhere else. And what they do in China, they put these things on a huge pile, and they just burn it, and they take out the materials by hand. Yeah. And so it's not designed for recycling. Yeah. And so people try to primitively to take out materials from there. We systematically look at design, all different types of products, and these are our races, for example. And here I would like to show you a little diagram. And my background first is chemistry. So if you see, this is a chromatograph of an off-gassing. So we put products in a big glass box, and we look what is off-gassing from that. And every signal what you see here, for example, benzene, here toluene, whatever, cyclohexanone, is at least one chemical. Yeah, this is a shaver which works pretty well for, let's say, the Taliban, for example. Yeah, because the material which you see here is the concentration of the chemicals are so high that you need to put it away about 1 meter. Yeah, that it doesn't exceed occupational health standards. Yeah. Yeah, but then it doesn't work that well anymore. Yeah. But in this context, we show you another off-gassing diagram. You see there are much lower peaks. It's a shaver made in Germany, and because of global sourcing and lean production, we already get chemicals in there which we normally wouldn't have, like here, the cyclohexanone, for example, which is a strong carcinogen. Yeah, because they buy the cheapest components wherever they can get it. Yeah. And they try to compete. This, the first shaver is about, it's $19, the other is $69. Yeah. And so the people try to buy the cheapest material for it, which I can understand. So we look at products, and I have some with me. I can show you in the discussion later. This is a Mattel toy here. We look at different children's toys, and I just want to give you the off-gassing diagram of this one. If you take a similar chromatogram at a gasoline station, the intake of chemicals is much lower. Yeah, so you don't. Yeah, so this children's toy is not designed for children. Yeah, so you see a lot of carcinogens off-gassing from this material. That doesn't say that each child gets cancer by having this toy. Yeah, not to generate any panic or misunderstanding. I just want to show that this is not this is ignoring the needs of children. Yeah. So if you look for weapons of mass destruction, yeah, here they are. Yeah. Or if you are interested in homeland security, then you better look at Mattel toys, for example. Yeah, because these are real chemical weapons. Yeah. So you don't. These are not designed for children. They're only designed to be cheap. Yeah. And the same is with heavy metals. It's not just organic substances. You see all these elements like cadmium, selenium, arsenic, yeah, in these all different types of children's toys. Yeah, these are surprise eggs. These are all different types of materials, McDonald's toys, et cetera, which are handed over to children. They're not designed for children. They're not designed for health. They contain a lot of high concentrations of heavy metals. But it's just what we are. This is a computer monitor, for example. It's not designed for being used in a building. Yeah, it's only designed to be cheap. Yeah, so you can use it outside, or if you take the average indoor air quality of a building, yeah, the concentration of air contaminants is about 5 times higher than outside air. If you now are sealing that building, yeah, you get inhale all these components in there. Yeah. So when we try to solve this. Yeah, we make things like, for example, in Europe, we now have a legislation which says we make things lead-free, yeah, because lead-free is sold for electronics. Yeah. This sounds good, yeah, first, but to make things free off doesn't help you that much if you don't look what replaces this. Yeah. So the things which go into these electronic products now to replace lead is silver, it's tin. Yeah. You can see that here on that. It's tin. Yeah, so it's silver, pretty rare. It's nickel, yeah. It's tin, and it's bismuth. Yeah, and bismuth is interesting because bismuth in nature, yeah, you have that here as well. Yeah, bismuth here in nature only comes with lead. Yeah. So whenever you are mining 1 ton of bismuth, yeah, it generates at least 10 tons of lead. Yeah. So you generate a cheap market for lead by making things lead-free. Yeah. And I want to tell you, companies like BP, Amoco, are selling leaded gasoline all over Africa. Yeah, because it's cheaper to do so. And maybe the people in Africa have a stronger health or whatever, so that they can deal with the lead easier than we do. Yeah. So another example, we have Volkswagen or Ford, etc., and they use brake pads. Yeah, and you're happy because it says, oh, it's asbestos-free. Yeah, it has a label on it, no asbestos in it anymore. You think, oh, that's good. There is some progress in human history with that. Yeah. Yeah, and so you're delighted, you think, yeah, that's good. Yeah. But the result is funny because what they do, instead of the lead, yeah, they have this element in it. Yeah. We have 12%, instead of the asbestos, they have 12% of antimony in there. Antimony, in this context, is a far stronger carcinogen. Yeah. Yeah. So it's free of asbestos, but the replacement is far more toxic. So what we do is, we don't talk about environment, and it's not about sustainability what I'm talking about. Yeah. First of all, sustainability is boring. Yeah. Yeah. Think about how is your relationship with your boyfriend? Yeah. Say, sustainable. Yeah. And say, oh, I'm so sorry for you. Yeah. If this is what you think it's a big goal, sustainability, then you better end this relationship immediately. It's not about environmental protection anymore, yeah, because we talk about protection when we destroy a little bit less. Yeah. I really appreciate to see all the people using Prius, Toyota, etc. And they say protect the environment, yeah, but you are not protecting the environment by using a Toyota. Yeah. Yeah, just destroying a little bit less. Yeah. It would be the same if I would say, oh, I'm protecting my 8-year-old daughter, Stella, yeah, and say, Stella, I'm beating you only 5 times instead of 10 times. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I'm protecting you. Yeah, there's no protection by minimizing damage. Yeah, yeah. So it is about human rights. Yeah, we do a lot of work for UNICEF, and you can see that 4.5 million children die every year because they don't have clean drinking water. Yeah, and we let them die somehow because we think we are too many on this planet. We think there's overpopulation and it's not that bad that they are dying because it's better for the planet. Yeah. So we have all these environmental organizations talking about that our consumption exceeds about 3 planets or 5 planets of loading capacity, yeah, which basically means we are too many. So we better get rid of the other people in there. Yeah. Or we try to minimize or to reduce our materials uses in there. So it's about human rights, because we easily could save these children. It would be less than 1 cent, you know, to pay a day for having children having access to clean drinking water. Yeah. But we don't do this. Yeah. We could do this, but we don't, because we think we are too many. Yeah. So this is a human rights question. As soon as you give up human rights, yeah, for people in Africa, they don't exist for us anymore as well. So we are starting to cannibalize each other, yeah, yeah, because we think, how, if you look at some medical activities, etc., then what we do is we think about how can we have more and more human rights for less and less people. Yeah, it's really an amazing thing what goes on as soon as you give up human rights, yeah, for any type of any group. Yeah. So we are in a sustainability area. We are losing 5,000 times more topsoil than we rebuild per time unit. Yeah, so we cannot continue with this on a longer term. And we have a lot of these data which are, first, if we look, they are alarming. Yeah. Lisa was talking about a positive perspective. And you can be sure there will be a positive perspective. But somehow this speeches have to be like a religious service. Yeah, so first you need to think about the sins, and then later there's the go in peace part is there as well. So please stay tuned here. Yeah. So, but I first want to show you some of the pictures. Here is a real interesting diet for this turtle. Yeah. there is this is an albatross. You know, albatross get these big, huge birds get going to get extinct because of taking up all the plastic waste from the oceans. There are more whales dying because of plastics in the oceans than of any other reason. Yeah, our situation is not, things are not designed for these animals. Yeah. So there are areas like you could read north of Hawaii, for example, where the plastic concentration in the water is 6 times higher than the plankton concentration. Yeah. Yeah. So basically, because it's not designed in the right way. So we think we are too many. Yeah, and what we do is we look at systems, carefully look at systems. And here the agenda changes. Yeah. We look at the biomass of ants, these tiny little insects. Yeah. And the biomass of ants, if you look at them, the biomass is about 4 times bigger than the biomass of all human beings. Yeah. So if you put them on one side and human beings at the other side, the ants have 4 times more biomass than of human beings. Yeah. And ants are, I think it's still not loud enough for you up here. Ants are, I thought for the negative news that can be, it doesn't matter, yeah. But now for the more positive ones, yeah. So if you look at the lifespan of ants, the average is about 28 days, yeah. So if you look at the calorie consumption of these ants, they equal about a world's human population of about 30 billion people, yeah. And they are not an environmental problem because these little insects are far more intelligent than we are, because every material which they use, which they process, they make available for others, yeah. So they make them, every nutrient which they use becomes a nutrient for the others, yeah. So in this context, if you would behave like ants, yeah, intelligently, we could be far more. And there have been societies on this planet who could be dealing in a similar way like ants, yeah? Like for example, the Chinese. Yeah? The Chinese could exist for 5,000 years with a far higher population density than we have in the Netherlands, for example, yeah, which is the most crowded Western world society. And they could live for 5,000 years and develop culture and evolution without stealing nutrients from their neighbors by processing nutrients back into cycles. I have been working in China for long, and today still, if you're living in the countryside and you're invited for dinner, yeah, then people still expect you to stay after dinner till you use the toilet because they won't have the nutrients back. Yeah. Yeah. It's unfriendly to leave before you leave the nutrients behind. Yeah. Which means that they needed to develop a good medicine. Yeah? They need to learn about pathogens. They needed to learn how to grow things in the rice field, and they needed to learn as well to eat everything that grows in the rice field. Yeah? Till today, the people in the countryside have a real interesting variety of food. Yeah, from all different types of snakes and snails and frogs and insects and whatever you can imagine. Because if they would not eat these different animals, yeah, and they are interested in variety to use all these nutrients in the best way, but if they wouldn't eat them, yeah, the protein would just fly away. Yeah. So they need nutrient cycles for that. And they need species diversity for that, because otherwise, yeah, they lose the protein. Yeah. And in a similar way, we could deal with nutrients as well. And this is what I want to talk about. So, are we really too many? Yeah. I want to point out that these are children who want to have a life as well. They want to have a name as well. They want to be seen as individuals. Yeah. And if you look at from that perspective, it's not about sustainability and about human rights. It's about design, how we design our society. Yeah. And sure, we have an overpopulation problem. Yeah. Of cars, yeah, of transportation systems, which don't work. But you can see here the positive story. All these people are protecting the environment, yeah, because they're in traffic jam, yeah, so they don't use, they reduce the gasoline consumption by that, yeah. But So what we do traditionally, we talk about how to minimize our ecological footprint, yeah, and how to reduce our footprint, how to have a smaller ecological rucksack or something like that. Yeah. What I want to talk about is that you are all important, yeah, that you are all relevant, and that you are all special. So why do you want to minimize your footprint? Yeah. I want to have a big footprint, yeah, but I want to make it a wetland, yeah, so that the other animals on this planet are happy to have us here. Yeah. So not minimizing damage, but generating support. Yeah. If you learn how to support the others, we can be far, far more on this planet. Yeah. And then we get the human rights back. Yeah. On the other side, this is traditionally what we do. Yeah. We take things, we use things, we put them in the environment, and we put them into landfills. It's a linear thinking. Yeah. We use these materials, and they end up in landfills. It's a traditional cradle-to-grave thinking. This cradle-to-grave thinking means that we end up with making the whole planet a graveyard at the end. Yeah. Yeah. So all the nutrients disappear with that. We put them into incinerators, and we think it's protecting the environment. But basically, we lose these materials. Yeah. This is what we call it. We take things, we make things, we put them back in the environment as waste. What is the strategy, what is mostly done, it's called eco-efficiency. Yeah? We make these things more efficient. Yeah? We minimize our gasoline consumption, we minimize our water consumption, we minimize, we reduce, we avoid. It's called dematerialization or eco-efficiency. But efficiency, think about efficiency from a perspective. Efficiency means you do a thing, what you do, yeah, and you do it right. Yeah. If it's wrong, you do it efficiently wrong. Yeah. Efficiency is ugly. Yeah. Think about falling in love with somebody efficiently. Yeah. Yeah. Or think about Mozart being efficient. Yeah. Or think about Van Gogh being efficient. Yeah. So it would be a big bang. Yeah. It would be put Mozart together in one big noise. Yeah. Oh yeah, Van Gogh, think about this first .com, yeah, and Van Gogh, Vincent Van Gogh with all these little dots, yeah, totally inefficient, yeah. Or if I would invite you for dinner, for example, yeah, and for an efficient dinner, dematerialized, it would be a glass of water and tablet with some Italian flavor in it or something like that, yeah. Yeah. But everything that is culture, what is creativity, is not efficient. Yeah. Efficiency is ugly, yeah. I think in university context, maybe we can talk about that. I know it's politically not correct, but do think about efficient sex. Yeah, how ugly. Yeah. So everything that is really nice, everything that we really enjoy is not efficient. Why do you want to be eco-efficient? Yeah. And look at nature. Yeah. Think about a cherry tree in spring. Yeah. What a waste of energy and resources. Yeah. For these few handful of cherries, yeah. Yeah, totally inefficient. Oh my God, what a mess. Yeah. Yeah, so everything that is really nice is not avoiding, minimizing, reducing. Yeah, it's wasteful. Yeah. But everything becomes a nutrient again. Yeah. So that's a different paradigm. And so if you think about eco-efficiency, it means to release fewer pounds of toxic materials. Yeah, and to measure prosperity by less activity. It results in smaller amounts of waste. Yeah. It standardizes, homogenizes things. Yeah. Yeah. Is this an attractive agenda? Yeah. You start from being 100% bad, and you try to be less bad, and your goal is zero. Yeah. When you're down to 10%, another 100% starts with this. Yeah. So and basically, from that perspective, efficiency mostly reaches the opposite. Yeah. Like, for example, we have been analyzing human lungs in Los Angeles, yeah, and today a tire from lasts about twice as long. Yeah, instead of because of eco-efficiency, the abrasion is much lower from a tire, yeah, and from your car. Yeah, but the particulates are much smaller. Yeah, and now before that, yeah, you couldn't inhale them, but now you can easily inhale a big part of these tire small particulates, yeah, and about 8 to 10% of all the U.S. citizens are suffering from latex allergies, and that's not because of using condoms. It's because of tire abrasion. Because 75% of all the latex, natural latex, goes into making tires. Yeah. So you try to intend it a good thing. You try to minimize the use of latex in tires. Yeah. But the opposite is what you achieve. Yeah. You have a permanent skin contact with small particulates in your lung of latex, yeah, which is a permanent sensitizing. So whenever you do surgeries, etc., you have more and more surgeons suffering from latex allergies with latex gloves, etc. But it's not the main reason. It's a permanent inhalation of small particulates. And these particulates don't sediment anymore, yeah, except when they are washed out by rain, like now. Yeah. But normally in the air, they stay forever, yeah, because they are so small that they don't sediment anymore. Yeah, so it is not, efficiency is not a solution. Yeah. Efficiency is a thinking that less bad, yeah, is good, but less bad is just less bad. Yeah. Yeah, so like less destruction is not protection of environment. Yeah. It's a question how you see human beings. Yeah. If you see it like some people in politics, then you talk about the evil empire. Yeah. But from my perspective, evil doesn't exist. Yeah. Evil is just the absence of quality. Yeah. Like darkness doesn't exist. It's just the absence of light. Yeah. Coldness doesn't exist. So only the absence of heat. Yeah. So if evil would exist in its own quality, just in staying the same logic, God wouldn't exist, yeah? Because God is defined as being almighty. But if there is evil with the same strength like the good, yeah, then there wouldn't be God existing, because then God wouldn't be almighty. Yeah? So in this context, it's just the absence of good. Yeah? So instead of thinking, oh, yes, I'm so bad, I'm 100% pig, and I'm so sorry for being on this planet, how can I minimize my footprint? Yeah, this is this agenda, yeah, which is not a good business curve as well. Yeah. We say, oh, look, this is eco-efficiency. We say, look, we call it eco-effectiveness. Yeah. Efficiency means doing things right. If they're wrong, they're efficiently wrong. Yeah. Effectiveness means looking what is the right thing to do. Yeah. And then you think about the different tools. And sometimes efficiency might be one of the tools, but normally nature doesn't use efficiency. Only then, when it's cold and dark in Sweden, yeah, then you need efficiency to minimize damage. If you're in Finland, yeah, and you walk, then your footprint is bad because it generates erosion. Yeah, yeah. So you want to minimize your footprint. But when you are in Texas, for example, yeah, then your footprint is good. Yeah, or if you're here. Yeah, if you would have more footprints in some areas, then the water would stay there. Yeah. The water stays in the meadow when there are footprints there of the cattle, for example. Yeah. So in this context, we think, look, what is our goal? What do we want to achieve? And then you have a positive agenda. You say, dear customer, the more you buy, the quicker we are. Yeah. Right now you say, dear customer, you better don't buy anything, because then you protect the environment. Yeah. But this is the opposite. We call it eco-effectiveness. To give you an example, it says instead of minimizing damage, it introduces positive materials into ecosystems. It requires no regulation to prevent people from doing things, but supporting people to do things. Yeah, it's a support agenda. It produces assets instead of liabilities. Yeah, and celebrates abundance and cultural diversity instead of minimizing damage. Yeah. So, but here is where we are in Silicon Valley. That's Deborah Dunn. I will see her on tomorrow. And the thing is, she is one of the leading people in Hewlett-Packard. Yeah. And she made a publication about 1.5 years ago where she explains that. You can see that here where the difference is. Yeah. It says, look, here, philanthropy is important to Hewlett-Packard, but we at Hewlett-Packard want our contribution and involvement in global citizenship initiatives to have a far greater impact than simply writing a check. That's clear. Yeah? You don't. They don't want to minimize their social impact. They want to have a. They want to be good for society. Yeah, yeah. And that's logic. It is good. Yeah. And Hewlett-Packard is a smart and good company. But for the environmental side, they call it on the environmental front. Yeah, which is already interesting. The term environmental front. Yeah, yeah. It's a war-like terminology. We have an explicit goal: designing new products so as to minimize the ecological impact. Yeah, isn't that amazing? Yeah, to minimize ecological impact. Is it somehow we are aliens on this planet, so we want to minimize our impact. Yeah, yeah. And linear thinking from production through disposal. Yeah, not from production through reuse or from production through reincarnation or whatever. Yeah, yeah. So it's linear thinking. So why it doesn't have the same logic? Think about Hewlett-Packard saying, "Oh, we want to minimize our impact for economy." Yeah, yeah. Nobody would do this. Yeah. But it's not just Hewlett-Packard. Yeah. Here you can see IBM using life cycle thinking improves the design of electronic products and reduces their environmental impact. We have far too many for reducing our environmental impact. And every reduction which we will do here will be overcompensated by more destruction in India and China. Yeah? So it doesn't make sense just to minimize damage. Yeah? So what we think about two different cycles. We make everything a nutrient. Yeah? One is the biosphere, yeah, for things which gets consumed. Yeah? We read about these articles which says the consumer doesn't want this. Yeah, but we are not consuming a TV set. We are not consuming a washing machine. Yeah, but we are consuming food. We are consuming brake pads. We are consuming shoe soles. Yeah, we are consuming washing detergents. These things which are changed by being used, biologically, chemically, physically changed. These are biological things which need to be designed to support the biosphere. Yeah. And on the other side, we look at things like a washing machine. Yeah, these are technical nutrients containing a huge quantity of really rare metals in here, yeah, which are far more rare than any oil, whatever type of thing. Yeah. So, and we put these in the technosphere. So we distinguish between nutrients. We eliminate the concept of waste. It's not about no waste. It's not about zero waste. Even when you think about zero waste, you think about waste. Yeah. We think from the very beginning about all nutrients. Yeah. Making everything a nutrient, what we deal with. Yeah. Then we can be far more people on this planet. Yeah. And then we don't need to be more, because people only have that many children if they have panic about their future. Yeah. But then we don't need to tell them, they just do it in a normal way because they don't have panic about their survival anymore. So this is where we distinguish between technical nutrients and biological nutrients. We distinguish between service products and consumption products. Yeah, yeah. So a computer is just a service product. It's not a. You don't consume that computer. Yeah, you only use it as a service. Yeah, so you don't eat it. And you don't. So you're not a consumer of that. So we have three basic design principles. Yeah, of the new next industrial revolution. First is just waste equals food. That's not like McDonald's. Yeah, McDonald's is food equals waste. Yeah, but in this case, it's really about making everything a nutrient. Yeah? Yeah, so really thinking everything as a nutrient, as food for biological cycles or technical cycles. Yeah, using current solar income, because we have more than 5,000 times more, and I can tell you, I'm really a big fan of nuclear reactors. As long as they are 110 million miles away from here, yeah, yeah. So and we celebrate diversity, even in the book which you see outside. It took me long to understand that it is not about respecting diversity. Yeah, in the book you can read respect diversity, but it's not enough. Yeah, it doesn't help you just to say, oh, I respect indigenous people. Yeah, yeah. You need to support them. Celebrate diversity instead of just say, oh yes, I respect you, but you will get extinct anyways. Yeah. So traditional design criteria are cost, aesthetics, performance. Yeah. And what we add is we say, is it ecologically intelligent? Yeah. Is it fair? And do we like it? Do we enjoy it? Yeah. If it's not, we shouldn't do it. So it's just adding more quality. Yeah. It's no longer about moral, ethics, whatever. It's just about quality. We call it in a way, we call it a total beauty design. Yeah. If people are not happy with it, if people lose their life by making it, yeah, it's just not beautiful. Yeah. So the first step is just to say, hey, we make things free of. At least sometimes there might be a chance. Yeah, like I showed you negative examples, there might be positive examples as well. The second thing is you do a personal preference. You say, what would you choose when you have a choice? The third thing is you make a passive positive list. And you look at things, you have an existing thing, and you look, how can it be done by replacing other things and take them out. And I will show you some examples. Then you do an active positive list where you positively choose things. Yeah. And then you reinvent. You look, what do people really want if they buy things behind that? I will give you more examples. So what we do is we define materials positively, each product positively. We say, A, from a nutrient perspective, A is ideal, B is principally okay, C can be tolerated, and X is not acceptable. Yeah. So each of these substances, we look at toxicology, we look at chemistry, we look at biology, all different types of things. I have a business partner and friend, his name is Bill McDonough, and he has been, and he is a designer, and I'm a science person. Or if you would say it like Madonna in the UK, I would say I'm his material boy in this context. Yeah. So I basically look at materials, yeah, how to make some nutrients, yeah, and I look at innovation, how to put them into cycle. Yeah. And we do this pretty successful with all different types of things. Yeah. Like we are choosing the chemicals which go into Nike products. We do fabrics, I have examples there, which you could eat. Yeah. Because, and especially in this country, you don't have enough uptake of fiber. Yeah. So, but these, if the pieces you cut off, the trimmings, whatever, when you make furniture, are so toxic, yeah, because of flame retardants, pigments, dye stuff, yeah, that in Europe, the things which you cut off need to go into hazardous waste incinerators, yeah, and then you think, oh yes, we want to protect the environment, yeah, with that, but the product goes on the market, yeah, and so what we do is we use 30 years of environmental debate, discussion now to make products, where every material which goes into such a fabric is designed to be edible, yeah? So that you could eat at least 1 pound of each ingredient in there. Yeah? Yeah. So it just becomes a better product because now the things which you are cutting off the pieces now can go into biological systems. We do cars, transportation systems, we do carpets, etc., and you can see it's gaining a lot of momentum because it allows you to do creative things, yeah, new things. It frees you from reducing, avoiding, minimizing. So like this Climatex life cycle is a perfect compostable material. Yeah. But so every material is chosen to go back in a biological cycle. Yeah. Before, people had hazardous materials. Yeah, the trimmings have to be declared as hazardous waste. Yeah, now you have a material which is a biological nutrient and which is perfectly compostable. So the material now can go back into gardening, replace peat, go back into biological cycles. And there are amazing things taking place. For example, we looked at the wool, where the wool comes from, and you see that Australians don't have enough acid rain. Yeah. So if you don't bring the sulfur back, yeah, it leads to the extinction of about 20 species of clover in Australia, even organic wool, yeah, because extraction, the wool contains tryptophan, for example, which is a sulfur-containing amino acid. Yeah, and if you don't bring the sulfur back, yeah, the clover, it gets extinct in Australia. So you need to think about the nutrient management, the materials back into cycles for that. Yeah. So think about SHA, it's the carpet, it's the most successful carpet in the history of SHA, which is a cradle-to-cradle technical nutrient. You only sell the use of the carpet instead of selling a carpet. Yeah. So what allows you to make a far better product, you don't need to choose the cheapest things anymore. Yeah, you sell the best ones because you don't hope that it falls apart pretty soon. You sell it for 3 years, for 5 years, for 8 years, and it stays the same for that period of time. So what you do, you just sell a healthy floor packaging insurance with that, yeah, instead of selling materials. Yeah, because you sell a service of that. Yeah. So before that, it was a big carpet packing with PVC and polyurethane. Now it's a technical nutrient forever. The nylon 6 can be used endlessly in that context. Yeah. So for example here, so it can go back permanently in a technical cycle without any relevant measurable losses in there. Yeah. That's a technical nutrient because do you really want to own polymers? Yeah. SHA is in the United States by far the biggest user of polymers. Yeah. And so instead of selling products and going away, yeah, they stay in touch with their customer permanently with their. Yeah. The book is made out of plastic. Yeah, it's printed on plastic. It's a polymer which is designed that you can wash out the inks and use the inks again as inks. And you can use the paper at least for 40 times for the same purpose. Because it doesn't make sense. There are not enough trees around. Yeah. The American use of paper is 400 kilograms, yeah, a year per capita. If the average paper use of this planet would be 200 kilograms per capita, there wouldn't be any tree left. And basically as well, I think it's not, trees deserve more. Yeah. It's good to use trees for making furniture or making houses, buildings, whatever. But to smash a tree to extract some cellulose from it doesn't make sense because all the high-tech paper is plastic anyways. Yeah. It's a cellulose covered with plastic, yeah, all these high-tech papers in there. So what we do is we do look at materials as a nutrient perspective. The nice thing with this book is you can read it in your bathtub as well, or you can read it at the beach, or whatever. Yeah. So you can. But the more interesting concept is not for newspaper for a book. It's for a newspaper. Yeah. Like the paper value of your New York Times is $2. Yeah. So if you would put a deposit on the New York Times, yeah, then you would give it back the next day. Yeah. And then you could melt the polymer and use it again. I want to point out that the situation of the United States is really critical. And I think I should have told you that in the first part of my speech. Yeah. And I know that you like to shoot the messenger then. Yeah. But I would like to point out that one third of the whole property of the United States is already owned by people and institutions from other countries because you don't have competitive products on the world market. Yeah. So you're basically selling your country. Yeah. You're selling your trees, you're selling your property. Yeah. And before the year 2020, more than half of all your property will be owned by foreign institutions, yeah, and foreign individuals. Yeah. Because that's the only thing what you have, you're selling your country. Yeah. So the only real competitive product in the longer term, except some few little areas, yeah, are weapons what you have. Yeah. So basically, there is a lot of logic in there to strengthen the military sector. But I want to point out that you will have a similar situation like the Soviet Union. Yeah. The Soviet Union at the end was only a superpower in the military sector. Yeah. In all the other sectors, they didn't have anything really to sell. Yeah. So the thing is, you need to learn how to do things here differently. And our environmental debate, yeah, about sustainability generated so much knowledge which doesn't exist in China or Malaysia that we don't need to compete with their products. We can do far better products here. Yeah. So we make beautiful things, yeah, so we need to support good design. Yeah. You need to make support technology in industry, yeah, to make good technology things. And we need to do things which are good and healthy and supportive, which are nutrients for biological or technical nutrient cycles. Yeah? But then we don't need to compete, and we have really competitive products which we could sell on the world market. Yeah? So this chair, for example, has been designed. Herman Miller is one of the areas where United States has real good competitive products. It's interior, it's textiles in some area. This chair is designed that each component can be used as a technical nutrient, because you only sell healthy sitting instead of selling a chair. Yeah. You sell an insurance for the best way to sit, the healthiest way to sit. The chair costs between $500 and $1,000, and it's highly profitable to make it. And Herman Miller sold in the first 3 months 70,000 chairs. Yeah. They never sold a chair that successfully. Yeah, and this chair has just a little label on it sometimes, which says designed for indoor use. Yeah. Yeah. And it's designed that you can put it apart in 2 minutes. Yeah. To disassembly takes 2 minutes. That makes assembly much easier as well. It's the most profitable product in company's history as well, because the assembly process is so fast. Yeah. And the polymers which we use in there are polymers which you can use at least for 300 times for the same purpose. Yeah. So you can melt it, you can use it, you can melt it, use it again and again. So you don't need to use the cheapest things anymore. You can use the best ones. Yeah. Some of the components we only tested for 200 times, and we gave up just on this, because it means that you have materials for the next 500 years, yeah, to be used. But I want to point out, it's not about durability. Yeah. It's not about things lasting forever, because it's about defined use periods. Yeah. If you think about durability for a computer, yeah, nobody would like to have a computer which lasts for 30 years. Yeah. It would be ridiculous. Yeah. But for all the other things, you always think durability is so good. Yeah. Durability is good for things which you don't need to know what they are. Yeah. If you can leave them behind and they are generating a habitat for others. Yeah. If you build a house, yeah, that you can go away and you don't need to take care, then this house becomes a habitat life for the others. Yeah. But if you need to have a long list of toxic materials or rare materials in there, then it cannot be durable, because later you will not know what it is. Yeah. And therefore, you can do far more beautiful design. Yeah. So it means you define all the ingredients which you have in there positively. Yeah. Each component, each pigment, each plasticizer, each antioxidant, every coating is defined to become a technical nutrient, yeah, forever. That's a buffalo concept, for example. Yeah. It means right now, yeah, we lose the materials. United States are exporting their used vehicles. And what people don't see is, with that, we lose all these trace elements here. Yeah, like, for example, you need all these elements here. Iron, manganese, chromium, vanadium, titanium, scandium, zirconium, vanadium, here, wolfram. You lose them all. They are all needed for specific steel qualities. Yeah. And what you do is you are exporting these cars into Turkey, mostly 3 million cars a year, about from the United States. And because in this country it's not allowed to use steel from cars for making building materials. Yeah. And that's good in a certain way, because if you don't separate copper, for example, yeah, from the steel, copper is a strong steel poison. Yeah. So in a case of an earthquake, these buildings fall apart immediately. Yeah? They collapse. Yeah? So you get these super hamburgers, basically. Yeah? I saw it in Turkey. And you have one layer of concrete, one layer of meat, because they collapse like that. And, yeah? So yeah, immediately. Yeah? There, in 1999, there were 20,000 people dying in Turkey because of poor steel quality. Yeah? But so we need to look at cars differently. And one of the things what we do with Ford is we call it the so-called buffalo concept, which means that every component in a car becomes a nutrient. Yeah. Every component is useful instead of minimizing damage. Yeah? So we call it in a type of a neutral vehicle. Yeah? So everything, every material becomes beneficial. Yeah? Like, for example, it's not just only the materials, it's as well the use of the thing. Yeah? Like, for example, in this country, there are more people dying of small particulates than they die through guns, yeah, die through traffic accidents. Yeah, if you take all the numbers of people dying through shooting and dying through car accidents, the number is much lower than the people die because of small particulates. Yeah, that doesn't mean that I want to support using handguns or something like that. It just says, look, we need to design our things differently. So we are working, for example, on underbody coatings of cars which actively absorb particulates. Yeah? So whenever you drive, you absorb particulates that they don't get inhaled by the people. So it's beneficial to drive in this context. Yeah? So it's basically the neutral vehicle. Yeah? So we generate transportation systems which are beneficial for the environment, yeah? Which clean the air, which generate safety for people instead of generating damage. Yeah? Yeah. So the neutral vehicle is, for example, instead of aiming to create cars with minimal or zero negative emissions, yeah, imagine cars designed to release positive emissions and generate other positive effects. Yeah. So, yeah. So, like, for example, the nitrous oxides produced in a car at high temperature, it's not intelligent to destroy these through a catalyst. Yeah? It makes far more sense to capture this nitrogen compounds and to use them as fertilizer. Yeah? And we do this. This is Model U. And you need to see, Mr. Bill Ford, that this car needs to be the next after the Model T. Yeah? And the nice thing with Ford is there is no General Motors, yeah? But there is Bill Ford. Yeah? So there is leadership combined with a family tradition. Yeah? And there is this cradle-to-cradle decision. This cradle-to-cradle activity will be Ford's activity for the next 25 years. Yeah? Yeah. So yeah, it's a concept car first, yeah? Because you need to show the intention where you want to go. Yeah? And you can see there it starts making all these different types of materials being nutrients, yeah? Activities in there. So I can give you, in the discussion and questions, a lot of these examples. Like, we have been working on a washing machine where you just sell 3,000 times of washing. Yeah. But what a pity is here that what we talk about, yeah, here, cradle to cradle, doesn't exist in your university curriculum. Yeah. It's only environmental management in minimizing damage, yeah, which generates only additional costs. Yeah. So this is why it's so important. We have organizations like the Business Sustainability Group, the Foundation on Global Community, and here are the people who generate a platform for them. So please get in touch with them, and because it needs a permanent dialogue. But it allows us to make things which are far better. It allows us to really enjoy life. So we work, for example, on an ice cream packaging. Yeah, if you go through California, you somehow think that most of the Nazis somehow went to California. Yeah. It's really strange to see these things like adopt highway litter control, yeah, or littering is a crime, yeah, or $1,000 fine. Yeah. If you would do this in Germany, everybody would be concerned that the Nazis are back. Yeah. Yeah. Somehow. Yeah. But basically here you do this. Yeah. And I think that littering is fun. Yeah. It's a way how you can mark your territory. Yeah, can say, I was there. Yeah, I'm important. Yeah. So if you see this in Italy, yeah, the Germans basically, they put it like that. Yeah. So if they throw things away. Yeah. But the Italians, like that. Yeah. 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 And they really enjoy littering. Yeah. And the more southern you are, the more people enjoy throwing things away. And it's the right thing to do, because this is how nutrients go back into cycles. Yeah. Littering is only a crime when you're in Sweden, yeah? Because even if you throw away a banana skin, it never rots, yeah? Yeah? Sure, it's a different thing. So you need to talk about design, yeah? Like, for example, we developed an ice cream packaging, just to illustrate what I'm talking about. This ice cream packaging contains seeds from rare plants, and it's a liquid at room temperature. It's only a solvent, it's only a film when it's frozen. Yeah? But you take it out, and it becomes liquid within a few hours, yeah? And it degrades immediately. Yeah? So always you can see with the packaging whether the ice cream is fresh or not. Yeah? Yeah, yeah. Because so you can take it out and you throw it away, and you behave like a songbird, yeah. Because you bring seeds back into biological cycles, yeah. So you support biodiversity by throwing things away, yeah. Instead of minimizing damage, yeah. So it's about thinking how can you support the other species and instead of being less bad, yeah. Because less bad is not good. For less bad, we have far too many, yeah. Whatever you do in guilt management, it doesn't help. So you need to generate a platform here how to do this differently. And these people here, I can just tell you, they are the right people to work with. Yeah? And you need to include this in your university curriculum, because I'm teaching, for example, at several universities, yeah? Oklahoma State University, yeah? Where I think 10% of all the students show up with a pickup truck or something like that. Yeah? So it's a different world. But I can tell you, they do more about this type of innovation than it's done at Stanford University. And if you really want to be a leading university, then you need to do something in this field, not in guilt management, but real innovation. Yeah. And so I would like to thank you for listening. And I think we have some time to answer questions and discuss this. Thank you very much.